episode of That's So Cincinnati. I'm here with my co-host, Burl Love. Hi, Burl.
Hello, Sherry. How are you?
I'm good. We're recording the morning after the Super Bowl. Did you stay up late last night?
I did. Okay. I was very happy with the results of the Super Bowl.
That is such a Cincinnati thing. That is so Cincinnati, Burl. We agree in the Coolidge household.
Well, you know, usually you would root for your conference, right? Like, we had a short story about George Clooney was asked, who are you rooting for in the Super Bowl? And he's like, well, I got to stick with the AFC since the Bengals are in the AFC and go for the Chiefs. But they're, you know, we have like an attitude in Cincinnati about the Chiefs for some reason. So,
well, it's been a tough go of it with them. Let's just put it that way. I mean, the mayor was on the podcast, and what did he say his biggest regret was? The jabroni comments.
Taking on Travis Kelce and the Chiefs, yes.
And so I'm of two minds, because I do believe that the Chiefs, they have earned a lot. And I don't want to hate on somebody who's earned and is really good, because you don't want to tear down something when they worked really hard.
You just don't want to be hating
successful. I want everyone to remember that Joe Burrow is better than Patrick Mahomes. So this is a good reminder, and we'll see them next year. And that is a very Cincinnati thing of me to say. But so I was happy with the results, because it is a reminder that the Chiefs aren't the best.
Well,
then we'll show everyone next year that we all will be in the mix.
And full disclosure, I actually felt a little sorry for them, because even though I was rooting for the Eagles,
to be a tough loss.
They scored a little bit at the end, but it was out of reach. When you get just crushed in the Super Bowl, that's tough. Even for the villain, even for the bad guy that you're rooting against. You could just see it on their faces. When they came out of the locker room at halftime, they knew it was over. I mean, they didn't come out fired up. They came up out just looking like sad sacks. I mean, you know.
It is like, what does your coach say in the locker room? Is it a pep talk, or is it,
But there was other big news Sunday night, locally.
There was.
I mean, huge news. Mm-hmm. Sherry, you can go south on 471 and cross the Daniel Carter Beard Bridge, aka the Big Mac Bridge, now. You don't have to, like, snake your way through town.
Sooner than they said it was going to be finished, I'm very impressed. They worked very hard. It mattered economically, and I think ODOT really understood the assignment, that it wasn't just, oh, this bridge is closed, and Cincinnati has a lot of other bridges. It was very, very bad for the economy here. Businesses near it, and just the traffic. People were leaving work early to get around the traffic, and it was not ideal. And so,
well, the original projection was mid-March. So in retrospect, I think they were just giving themselves a lot of wiggle room. Like, they knew, to your point, it's such an important, you know, connector, and the way people get around town and over the river. They didn't want to blow the deadline, right?
It's like airlines. This is what time you're going to land. And anytime you get on a plane, they're like, well, we're going to be like 25 minutes ahead of schedule. Well, you just built that in.
Right. That's so they don't have to, you know, give you mileage or points. But yes, a lot of people who, you know, if they have to commute across the river, it doubled the time. Because there's just no other good alternative, especially if you're going into Newport. You know, you got to bail. You know, what a lot of people did was bail early, you know, get off the highway in downtown and go through downtown and then try to get over the Newport Bridge.
I know. I just finally remembered to do that all the time.
Right.
I don't have
to. I know the back way to my in-laws' house now, just in time to not have to go the back way anymore. So
that was very good news. And what do we all know now? We know the actual name of the Big Mac Bridge, which I'm not sure I could have told. I would have sort of known it.
I could have.
Oh, you're a Boy Scout.
That's right. Daniel Carter Beard was one of the people who got the Boy Scouts established in America. You know, it was started in England by Baden Powell. And Daniel Carter Beard was a friend of his and started a group that became the Boy Scouts of America. He's from Covington. You can see his birthplace home on a walking tour of Covington. Yes, it's pretty cool. And so, yes, because I'm connected to the Scouter community, whenever we have a headline that says Big Mac Bridge, do I hear it from people? They're like, can't you call it the Daniel Carter Beard Bridge?
Don't they know how many characters go in a short headline on the website?
And also, if you're trying to have the story pop up in search,
and that
a lot of people just search Big Mac Bridge. Yeah. So we kind of have to do both to make sure people find it. But yes, who's our guest today, Sherry?
I know, we just jumped right in because it's a Monday morning. I feel like, because I haven't seen you like all week, like normally I'll have seen you, and we kind of just jumped in. Josh Huser. He is his business card must be gigantic. He has a company called Agar, but he is also, he's very involved. He kind of describes it as like Cincinnati experience, and he creates these things. So yes. Ghost Baby, Factory 52, Transept, like if you want to have an event at the Transept, he runs that space, and everything he touches kind of turns to gold. And I'm looking forward to talking to him about like his vision.
All right. Well, let's not wait. Let's bring on Josh Huser.
Special guest time here on That's So Cincinnati. I'm very excited to welcome Josh Huser.
Hello, happy to be here.
So when we were talking to Josh, I was trying to figure out how do you introduce Josh? Because usually our guests have just kind of one thing they're associated with, like Terry Francona, manager of the Reds. But where do you start with Josh Huser? So Josh, introduce yourself. How do you describe who you are and what you do?
Josh Huser, I create experiences. I think that's my bread and butter. That starts with Agar, which is an experiential marketing firm in Over the Rhine. But we also have Hospitality Ventures, The Transept, Ghost Baby, and then also our involvement with Blink and pretty much every other big experience that happens here in Cincinnati.
So I think probably most people would associate you right now with Ghost Baby because that club, nightclub, bar in Over the Rhine has gotten some national headlines besides all the love the Enquirer has given. Right. I had to write it all down. Featured in Forbes, Midwest Living, and of course, one of the best bars in America, as determined by Esquire, the only one in Ohio. And if you've not been to Ghost Baby, I would dare say it's probably the only bar in the country, maybe the world, who knows, that's in a beer tunnel.
I believe it is the only one in a lagering tunnel that I'm aware of. It's definitely been a unique experience, but it was made for that. I mean, when I walked into the space, I was like, oh, this, here it is. We're just going to do a throwback juke and jazz bar from the early, you know, pre-prohibition meets the electric 80s and make it go. So it's an experience. I wouldn't call it a bar. It's a place that you go to have drinks, have memories, have moments with loved ones and friends and people from out of town, most importantly.
What I like about it, besides the history of it, is a lot of times when you go into a club that has music featured, the music is kind of competing with people who just want to have conversation. And the way that's set up, it's kind of like in two parts. You have the kind of the bar proper, and then what do you call the area where the...
Yeah, the front bar is called the Rattle Room. Okay. So that's welcome to walk-ins, you know, 5 nights a week when we're open. And then the back room is called the Den. And the Den is for reservation for groups of 2, 4, and 6. And we do live music 5 nights a week. Sometimes on Saturday, we do 6 sets of music. So we open at 4, and there's a line at 4 on Saturdays. It's pretty insane.
It is. We're going to talk about lions in front of your bars later on. So when I was still out of town, I was working at USA Today in D.C., but I came back to Cincinnati for an editor's conference, Gannett Editor's Conference, that was held here and hosted by then-editor Peter Badia. And so one of the things we did, we went down to Over the Rhine, and we had a tour. This is before you opened Ghost Baby. And we had a tour of some of those tunnels. And, you know, I was aware of them, but people were blown away that we're in from out of town. And one of the things, I can't remember who was guiding us, somebody at the business incubator that's there. Yep. I can't remember what it's called now.
Centrifuge?
Yes.
Yep.
Was giving the tour. And he said that you know, people have talked about doing something cool down here, but it's really tough because you're like four stories.
Yeah, 49 feet below street level.
Below street level. And that kind of poses some, you know, safety challenges in terms of fire regulations and exits and everything like that. And he was pretty, he was not optimistic. He was like, yeah, it's going to be really tough for someone to make this work. How did you pull it off?
Well, to your point, being having a great partner of 3CDC, that really allowed us to put the investment into the space to make sure that it was, you know, fire safe. So you need two means of egress. You need an elevator. You need fire compression. All that is very expensive for a place to start up. So fortunate they did that when they did centrifuge and put those assets in that allowed it to be a space that you could bring to life. So when I walked in the space, I knew right away, oh, this, it's got everything you need to open a space. Now, we operate it like a restaurant. We have multiple layers of security. So we have the guy at the top of the steps. We have people down at the bottom steps. And then we have the host stand and we have the front bar. So some people give us a little slack because of our pricing of our drinks, which I think are very reasonable considering you're not paying for entertainment, but also you're getting a restaurant experience for the service of just beverage. So we do have a lot of loaded overhead that most places do not. We're not a corner bar. We are a back alley experience that really puts Cincinnati musicians in front of, you know, a packed house five nights a week, which we're very proud of.
And no signage other than the purple light.
Just the purple light. Yeah, find it and it's there.
It's kind of cool. Yeah. It's kind of like when you take guests there, you're like, okay, I know this place. And we go through this back alley and there's no sign, and there's usually like a line, and you got your, you know, I call them bouncers or whatever, but you got your security, chief of security at the front there. No, there's no other experience like it in Cincinnati, which is kind of fun. The other high profile project you've been working with that people might know if they don't know the name Josh Huser is Blink.
Correct.
Yep. So in my opinion, like there really wouldn't be a Blink without you, even though
there's a lot of parties that are,
it's grown, but you were key to the first Blink.
Yeah. Little things add to big things. You know, we did a parking lot event back in 2012, that we did the first projection mapping on, which then led to Luminosity, which
we did. I don't think I know pre-Luminosity.
Yeah. Which we did an event, during Cincinnati Design Week, which the symphony was there. The mayor at the time, Mallory, was there. There was a group of Cincinnati cohorts and said, what if we did this to this live symphony orchestra at Music Hall? And that created Luminosity. So we did 3 years of Luminosity, and Luminosity had the word city in it, which was the goal was to create Blink from the beginning of Luminosity. But that unfortunately didn't happen. And we ended up collaborating with Bray Berlin Artworks and Agar and the Hale Foundation to create Blink in 2017. And we've now done four. So it's been exciting, and it should be something that, you know, the city hopefully appreciates, and it's something that we can keep around. You know, it's only a one every 2 year event, and the future right now is kind of up in the air.
It does cost money.
It costs a lot of money.
It's not like people are like, oh, there's problems with it, because it's so amazing, but it does cost money.
It costs a lot of money.
Speaking of money, when you started it with support from the Hale Foundation, were you involved in that pitch for that funding?
Yes.
What was it hard to get people's minds wrapped around the concept?
It wasn't hard to get Tim Maloney's mind wrapped around the concept, because he had seen what we were doing with street art and public art and murals and what was happening in the Wynwood District in Miami. And we had took him down there to see that. And then he saw the power of Luminosity and the projection. So when we and Brave Berlin went together to combine those two art forms to create a festival, he bought into it right away and he saw it right away. The murals being the economic development around Findlay Market to drive foot traffic, to drive people to stay 30 minutes longer on their weekend to explore the city and around Findlay Market. And then also the city really bought into it well, because I think they knew what was the experience of Luminosity. And that first year of 40,000 people in our park creating community together, and then saw the fences go up year after year when we should be breaking down fences, breaking down barriers. It's symbolism for the city. So I think the city really understood what it was, you know, at the same time as the Hale Foundation and everyone else, that allowed it to be accepted and explode to the magnitude that it's been.
What makes you say Blink? Is it just the money?
Yeah, I mean, it is the money. It's an expensive budget, you know, year after year. And I think we have to get creative on the longevity of what Blink can become. I think it can become more than just a four-day event. I think it actually can help inspire kids in education. We should be looking at ways that it's brought in through CPS, all the way up through college. You know, we have the colleges involved, Xavier, UC, Miami, NKU. Can we get kids looking at the world through the lens of art and creativity through the lens of Blink at an earlier age and impact kids in this community much earlier? And I think Blink has a tremendous power to do that. And we should be thinking that, as well as how to make sure that it does come around every 2 years. It's in my opinion, by far the greatest marketing tool that our city has right now. And we need to be shouting on the rooftops about that, not only here locally, but out nationally and internationally.
So I think this is a good segue.
Jump in,
you guys.
Sherry.
We're going to tell some stories, I think. Yeah. You two know each other going way back. And so we're going to do that at the end because I love some good stories about Burl. But I think this is a good segue because right now we are hearing so much that we are an arts city as we are in the midst of the bid to get Sundance.
Yep.
And you have been involved in that. But that is really where I feel like we have cemented the we are an arts city.
Yes.
And like, we have been this, but we're saying it. And I do love that. So Let's talk about the fact that we're an art city and why that's such a good fit for Sundance.
Well, going back to the art city, I mean, 32 cities have NFL teams. 32 cities have Major League Baseball teams. I don't know, 20-something cities now have Major League Soccer teams. You know, that sports are, you know, that, and they're a major attraction and a major way to get your market, your message out about your city. But of all those 32 cities, none of them have a platform like Blink. And I think that's super important that art is the new sport. As you look at the rise of digital technology and AI, it's going to be the creative thinkers and the creators that drive a new economy, which is why Sundance is so important to Cincinnati to be able to, you know, claim our stake as one of the most artistic, creative towns in the country by welcoming a festival like Sundance. And I believe that the work that Kristen Schlottman has done at the Film Commission needs to be, she needs to be thanked, quite frankly. And it needs to be a model on how we attract and retain other experiences and future events to our city. I mean, she single-handedly laid out that presentation and answered that RFP better than any organization in this town could have. And she should be given a lot of credit for the work and effort she's put into it.
What is different about this effort that she's kind of brought to it? Because, you know, this is kind of businessy, but we tried to lure the Amazon headquarters here and we were missing some big transportation pieces and that's kind of boring, but we got that now. But then we tried to be a World Cup city and we are a soccer city and that seemed like a natural fit, but we just missed out just a little bit. And what is different this time, do you think, that's going to put us over the top? You guys, the Sundance, we don't know what day they're going to announce. We're three.
Josh probably knows because he knows everything. But we, the collective we.
The collective we. Shall see. Like March or April, we're going to hear. So we're just in the final little push now.
Well, Cincinnati needs to win. And I think we got to look at our track record over the last 10 years and say, what have we won? And I don't know that we've won a lot of outside experiences. Now, we can fault the convention center. But that's going to be done soon, so that excuse is going to be gone. I think we need to rephrase our approach and how we approach these outside organizations to attract other organizations, businesses, or festivals to come here. I think we need to take the lens of the people of Cincinnati and the ethos that this region has versus data points and economic studies and relevancy. We need to sell people on the good people that are here, and people connect with that. They emotionally connect to it. There's a shared vision. And I think Kristen's done a really good job of answering the RFP as Sundance wrote it. If you look at the three cities, Salt Lake, Boulder, and Cincinnati, we responded best to the RFP that was put out, flat period. And that's why we are a finalist. And she knows, and to also add to that, she understands that world. She is in it every single day. So the best person to sell that is the person that lives it, breathes it, and lives in it. Whereas I think sometimes maybe our organizations in town aren't pulling the right influencer or the right lead with the experience to actually go win that business.
So you helped host people from Sundance to come here.
Yes.
During Blink was the first visit, right?
No, the first visit was back in May.
Oh, wow.
Blink was, they've been coming in and out of town for about 6 months now. But the first big experience was in May. And that was an experience that myself, Jackie Rowe at Game Day, and Kristen led the experience of how we were going to introduce the Sundance Committee to Cincinnati, to the creative class of Cincinnati. And it was, you know, I believe it was in Variety Magazine said that like the presentation that we laid out for Sundance was spread through the industry of like, we answered the RFP correctly.
So what in your mind are some of the key elements that we have that gives us the edge?
Number one, accessibility. There's, you know, downtown, which I was even surprised, there's like 15 movie theaters or theaters within like 8 or 9 blocks, which is absurd. These awesome buildings that we have that are just going underutilized. So what a great way to fill that, number one. Number two, we're welcoming. It's flat. It's easy to walk around. People are friendly here. Not to say they're not friendly other places. And third, like we have a film commission that is making films in Cincinnati that are showing in Sundance. So we have the industry here. It's maybe not be as highly recognized as other towns, but we have a great reputation of hosting and producing really good films in this market. And that's important. And then the final piece, we, you know, if you want to call it flyover country, call it flyover country, but we are consumers. That's the one thing about the Midwest is we are consumers, and we will consume content, and we will consume entertainment, and we will buy tickets to see those films. And it won't cost you $900 a night for a hotel room like it does in Park City.
Until the hotels figure out that Sundance is coming here, and then they're going to...
Then we just put rate blocks on it, right? I mean, if we want to communicate as a city, we put rate blocks.
Not that it's a bad thing to try. I mean, this is all... Yeah. I'm sure they were wined and dined in some of, you know, over the Rhine's and Cincinnati's finest restaurants.
They were given a very great experience of how to get around in the city one place at a time. They saw our theaters. They saw live performances of artists that really let them know these are people that are from here. They met our community stakeholders in film and entertainment and in content. And that's more important than... you know, meeting dignitaries and delegations that just go to sell the city. Mm-hmm. This isn't a sell. We're not here to stand up and say, why? We're here to show that we align with your mission. And that's a different type of sell than telling us all about the facts or the amount of hotel rooms or how many people we can put through our metro system. Like, that's secondary. We should do that. That's why we're a city. We should have that information. But showing how you align with Sundance's mission and their ethos is what we represented. And I think we did that the best.
So that's an interesting point. It's not a hard sell, you might say, as much as a here's what we have. Like, it speaks for itself.
We understand you.
Yeah.
I think... Let's not, too many times the way we sell our city that I see as a bystander is we sell the assets that we have or the things that we cherish here. But to an outsider, to someone who's not from here, You want to be able to be that, hey, I'm understood and I can fit in here, and show me how you do that. Don't tell me, you know, the amount of flights we get in. Don't, you know, the amount of Fortune 100 companies. That's important, but that's a footnote. It's really meet the people, experience the city, understand what we're about, and does that match with your organization's alignment and goals? It's selling the experience. It's not selling the facts. And right now, I believe a lot of our organizations in town sell our facts.
I had so much fun. I went to the tennis tournament this year, and we're riding the golf cart. We had to park like a million miles away. Well, the next day, remember, it was canceled because it was going to rain. Mm-hmm. And they were predicting these huge rainstorms. And we were on a golf cart with two couples from out of town who wanted to see the first like Cincinnati Open under the new management and everything. And they had never been here, and they were blown away. And they're like, oh, no, it's going to rain. But it was so much fun. I was with my friend Julie, who Burl knows, to tell them all the things they could do here and the things that we had to offer if they couldn't go see tennis the next day. Like, there was just a plethora of things.
And look at that. You know, look at, you know, John Barrett, you know, saved that tournament from being here. But and they rounded up the corporate support that was needed. Mm-hmm. That was the footnote. But what sold it was the experience when they were here in Cincinnati and they saw the amount of volunteers and they saw how well that tennis tournament was ran. Like, that's what
they saw
it.
How much the players love coming here.
Yeah, it was all of those pieces together. Mm-hmm. Like, we showed that we understood the needs of the tournament, and that's what delivered. And then obviously the corporate support and financial backing that was needed is there, and they will be there if it's bettering our community. I think our city has shown that. But you got to connect with the audience.
All right, shifting gears, we have a little housekeeping to do before we go down memory lane. As reported in the Enquirer and other sources, you were originally part of the development around TQL Stadium.
Correct.
Specifically the hotel.
Yep.
Not so much anymore.
Yeah, I often say everybody hears about the deals you get in, but they don't hear about how you get out of the deals. So yeah, as of January 2024, I exited that project. Still wish the development the best. Have a great relationship with Jeff Birding and the team. Sometimes just the best deals are the deals you don't do. And I appreciate the experience I had with them. I want that to be a successful development because I understand what it's going to do to Over the Rhine. I love the ability to go high. There's no height restrictions. So we have high dense development, which the city desperately needs. And the vision that FC's laid out is a good one for the West End and the community as a whole. And think it's going to be a home run. I hope the arena goes over there as well.
I'm glad you brought that up because I was trying to figure out a way to delicately work that in. Now, our good friend Jeff Birding, obviously not just a fan and a supporter of the need to have a new arena, but all things being equal, he would love it in the West End.
Yeah, I mean, I think
and it, so you think that's where it should go to?
I think it should go over in the West End. It'll help continue to support the backbone of Over the Rhine. The Banks already has the two stadiums, 82 home games. The Bengals doing really well. That should be enough to program that space down there. And Over the Rhine is also the lifeline of our city as well. And I believe that by it going into the West End, it'll spur development further west in the West End. It'll also continue to supplant Over the Rhine as an entertainment district that's here to stay. So my take would be to put it over in the West End.
There really does seem to be like these two spots, like further west too, of getting the space, but it's just with the Brent Spence Bridge.
Oh, the convention center would be great, you know, over there. But we're talking 10 years out.
Yeah, too long.
And about what I said earlier, like, we need to win now. And that, I commend Jeff when he stands up and says, we need to win. And the arena will help us win. The convention center is going to help us win.
I don't know if you stop us if we've ever heard we talk about Jeff Birding wanting to win, bro.
No, no. But Jeff also is the person who's been a guest on this podcast more than anybody else. And if you count name drops.
I would say that would be a theme.
We're going to have to see if we can get through a podcast without Jeff's name coming up.
No, because he's involved in a lot of things, and I he has a vision.
He has a vision. And like, I think we all have a vision. I have a vision for this town and city, and we all do. I think that's why we've, you know, if you look over the last 20 years, that's why this city has started to grow and become into its own, because there's been a lot of people that's stayed in this market. We've seen it when it was at its bottom, and we've all in many different ways or different facets have helped build it, and we don't want to see it stop. And we don't want to, any entrepreneur doesn't want to see things go backwards. And I think we're at a pivotal time in our city right now where we either going to continue to catapult forward or we're going to start to slide backwards. You're seeing it in just the amount of foot traffic downtown, the ever-changing, I guess, rhythms and ways people are working with that work from home, work at the office. You know, our downtown's changing, and it's got to change for the best. Without a core city, the region will not succeed.
So speaking of vision, what a perfect segue. Before 3CDC came online and really started the Over the Rhine Renaissance, before Ghost Baby, there was a group of guys, I think there were three of you, maybe four, that decided to create a New York club experience in Over the Rhine. Again, before the Renaissance, before people really, there was a few places on Main Street people would go to, but no one was really living down there, like, you know, the housing redevelopment and everything like that. And these guys started a club called Club Claw. And that's when I first met Josh Huser, because it was 2003. So 22 years ago, coming up on that. So that's when I
because
was...
Because you like that's went when to the I, club, that's, girl, that's and that's like when
I was,
there?
That's when I was in the demo of a young professional, right?
Okay.
You know? And so it sort of came out.
Are there pictures?
There's lots of pictures. The whole place was documented.
That's the problem. There are too many pictures.
Lots of pictures.
Yeah. But I would say that, you know, you had the vision that that area was the place that people should go and have that kind of experience. So Club Claw, what you guys were... It's about 2 years, maybe?
I was 23 years old. I just graduated college. It was 18 months after our riots had hit Cincinnati. And there was a lot of empty buildings downtown. And we opened a nightclub. And the gimmick was we were only open 8 hours a week. It was Friday and Saturday, 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. And people just couldn't wrap their heads around, like, why are you guys only open 8 hours a week? So we turned it into this whole story or experience of being only open 8 hours. Problem was, like, no one was coming downtown and no one was gonna come downtown. So the only way you could get people downtown is if you went after the young, creative people of self-expression that would come down in an area that you normally wouldn't go to. And it created a little risk. It created a little bit of excitement. And when you got inside, you were safe and the space was safe. It was all about diversity, all about different points of view. A lot of artwork was in the spaces.
A lot of artwork.
And it was expression. It was an experience that was based around self-expression. And it worked.
And so...
And it seems like only something that at 23, that you would know what another 23-year-old would want to do.
Yep.
And what, understand that.
The great part about it was there was... This is so New York. There was always a line to get in, even if there weren't that many people inside, because that was the mystique you guys wanted to create, you know? And so just like, you know, and the whole dynamics of like, you know, because I was an observer as a journalist, right? Even though I went to the club a few times and we had some events there.
Yep.
Yeah, that's another story. But
is it though? I don't know. Yeah.
Like if you showed up and you were dressed like, oh, like I can compare it to almost like
Party Monsters.
Like
if you put effort.
Yeah, if you were like really like looking like
I was going to the clubs.
We're talking full like makeup,
yeah, makeup,
wild
two-foot heels, yeah, you know, fur coats.
You never waited. You got in right away.
You got in right away. And so that sent the message like, oh, okay, these people aren't playing. So then everybody started coming up with, you know, these. It was like Studio 64 kind of yeah, vibe, right? And I think that's what you guys were going for. But, you know, when I look back and when people write the history of the Over the Rhine Renaissance, that's a chapter right there. That's a very important chapter. And
it's an important chapter of downtown because we were in downtown, you know, and we were renting old restaurants that were closed and we'd sign 18-month to 2-year leases. You can imagine signing a 2-year lease downtown right now. You can't do it.
Right.
But it was so desolate and young people would come downtown. And I think that's why we've got this resurgence of our city is we were down here seeing these buildings, imagining what they could be. And then 3CDC came along and actually gave people the opportunity to create some of those spaces and places. And it's just kind of expanded and grown from there. But some of those core principles are still alive today in something like Blink and something in the desire to woo a Sundance, to bring them here. It's like, hey, look at us. We want to be discovered. And I think Cincinnati is a great city for discovery. And that's one of the things that we put out to Sundance that Kristen really preached is like the idea of discovery. Film is discovery and our city wants to be discovered.
So within Club Claw,
yep,
there was a small room, like a little den.
The Ruby Room.
Yes. And if you were somebody, you could get into the Ruby Room. And
or you just rented it.
Sometimes. Yeah, you could. Yeah, that's what we did. But if you were lucky, Jeff himself would be in there holding court. I mean, that's yes, the kind of like, yeah.
He did come often. Night Tara Reid was in. Snoop Dogg was there. Justin Timberlake came. I mean, it was just every night there was different. If there was any remote near celebrity that was in Cincinnati, they came in town. And it was before social media. So we just sent those photos to the media the next morning and just said, look who was here last night.
Where do those people go now?
They're all walking amongst us.
Where are the clubs, though? Like, what are the clubs? Where can we go?
Well, that's what I was going to say. So I left the area like shortly after, like maybe 2006, and was gone 12 years, you know, and lots has changed, if you know, for the better, for the worse, but you know, but the more things change, the more they stay the same, because I roll back into town and who's got the hottest club still, even though it's not Club Claw, it's Josh Huser, you know, the force behind Ghost Baby. So yeah, it's just like, it kept the, you know, like when you they say it's hard to go back home because things change or whatever. Yep. So it gave me a sense of like, you know, oh, I am back home because Josh still has the hottest club in town. Yep. So
yeah, it feels good. I mean, I have 3 kids now, so I'm not out that late. I actually had a couple people texting me Saturday night wanting to, you know, hey, can you get me in Ghost Baby? And I hate to say, the next morning, I'm like, I was sleeping, man. Like, I'm so sorry.
God, who would text Josh and try to get into the
club? But a lot of people text.
Who would have the nerve, me?
Come in from out of town, and it feels, I said, that's what the place is for. Like, it should be, I want people to text me. And I want to take care of them because that's what the place is for. It's for people feeling welcome and hopefully having a great experience in Cincinnati and sharing with others.
Well, it is that space. You did a good job. All right. Well, we went over, Sherry.
We could talk more to Josh. We didn't talk about is Factory 52. Mm. So you did help design that, right?
Yeah, we did the public art and placemaking strategy for Factory 52. Just, you know, PLK, great development, and really putting life back into, you know, the city of Norwood that has been kind of overlooked for a long time. I often want to ask Bill Cunningham to come down to Factory 52 as much as he rags on City of Norwood on 700 WLW. I'm like, if we could just get Bill Cunningham.
Now that is a night out I want to see.
That would be the ultimate win there.
I'll help you with that. We'll guilt him.
I got to be there.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to be there. Maybe a live radio remote.
Right.
From Factory 52,
that
Norwood.
That would be something. So. All right. Well, Josh, you got a ton of stuff going on, so we know you're busy. So we thank you for squeezing us in here. Like I said, People might not know you, but man, they know what you have done, even though they don't know all the people behind it. So hopefully we've helped connect those dots for some people.
Yep.
And thanks for being on our podcast.
Appreciate you guys having me. Thank you.
That was such an inspiring conversation to start the week out with.
I agree. I was a believer before, but now I'm 100% a believer in Sundance coming here.
No, if you look at, and I'll be writing a big story about this, you guys. In fact, that Variety story is like, I had printed it out and it's sitting on my desk right now. I haven't read it yet. I am writing a big story about it, but we really have all of the things that they are looking for here. And it's just a matter of them knowing it. And I feel like this team, I have a lot of confidence that this team did do a good explainer. It's shocking how many theaters we have downtown, honestly. That are, and it's very walkable.
Right.
I can really, I can see it here. I can really envision what it's going to look like.
And I think, like, if you follow the hints and all of those things, and we had this as a little story too, the remark that one of the festival organizers said about how expensive it is to do a festival in a mountain town. So we're the only city that's not in a mountain town, so.
That's true, actually.
Or that doesn't have mountains around it. I mean, we have mounts, right? We have
hills. We have hills.
We have Mount Adams. No, they're mounts. I mean, they're named that.
That's
Can you name the seven hills of Cincinnati?
No, I can't. I used to be able to, I think.
You know, I think it fluctuates a little bit, but like, I mean, let's do this. You got Mount Adams, Mount Lookout.
Mount Airy,
Mount Washington. There used to be a t-shirt back in the day that said Ski Cincinnati, and it had all of them listed on it,
even though there's no ski resorts. In the t-shirt business, Burl.
That is true. But yeah, well.
We didn't name seven, I don't think.
Well, we did enough. Okay. You get the idea. But yeah, it's, you know, it would be a huge, huge boom for the region to land a festival like that. So hats off to Josh and Kristen, who he mentioned. Schlottman, who is, you know, head of the Film Society. There has been a lot of people working behind the scenes, in front of the scenes to bring this here. So more to come, right? And especially, Sherry, you are working on a story that talks about all the things we need to know when it comes to bringing that event to,
yes, I
to
am.
Our town. All right. Did you do anything fun this weekend?
I went to Factory 52.
Oh, wow. How convenient.
I am fresh off of eating my first slice of trophy pizza, which is the Washington Post, and Keith Pandolfi highly recommends it as well, named it the best like New York-style pizza in Cincinnati, and it is incredible.
You had that at Factory 52?
I did.
We are lucky we live maybe 2 miles away from one of their brick-and-mortar spots in Evendale. Yeah.
So when it first kind of came out, we were going to try it. And then like from our house, it was like over Christmas time and we were looking and it was like 40 minutes from our house. so we were like, no, but now it's in Factory 52.
Yeah.
So I had to do it when I was there. And it is really just a cool gathering space.
Yeah. Well, I like a good New York pizza. And you know it's a good New York pizza. Two things. There's no way you're going to eat it without folding it. You know, I mean, it just has to be folded to eat it, right?
I think I used a fork, but all right.
Oh, shit.
You're Italian and you use a fork for pizza? I know.
You're going to lose your Italian membership card.
That's true, actually. Don't tell my dad.
The other thing, because it's so thin, right? A large pizza is comically large. Like, it's not
a I just had a slice and it was gigantic.
Gigantic. But if you order a large pizza and you bring it home, it is giant. Like it's comically large. When Lauren brought it home the first time, it was like, oh my gosh, who's going to eat all this pizza? But it's thin, so you can have multiple pieces.
I kind of ate to the crust like a child, but I was going to eat. I was planning on eating the crust, and Alex went to like take it away from me, thinking I wasn't going to eat it, and I like slapped his hand.
Right.
I was like, no, I'm eating that. It was good.
All right. Well, since we're talking food to wrap things up today, your good friend and mine, Keith Pandolfi, and his editor, also good friend of you and mine, Rasputin Todd, mm-hmm. that is his name, they joined forces to put together the list of Cincinnati, just in time for Valentine's Day, the 10 most romantic restaurants in Cincinnati. So we're going to go through them quickly. You can comment, and then you can also offer your thoughts on, you know, whether they missed one.
Okay.
And where, you know, who would we have to cross off the list for 10, right? Okay. And these are in order of ranking. So it's not just they picked 10. They ranked them 10, to, you know, in reverse order. Number 10, Ruby's, any location.
I would have put that higher.
Higher.
All right. I guess this is what we're doing. All right.
Number
Keith,
nine,
I love you, but
Baker's
okay, here
table.
We go.
That was a surprise to me. I like the place, but I, you know, so maybe if we want to wedge one on, we could say that our list, Sherry, we'd put Baker's Table on.
And remember, this isn't about food. It's about romance.
Romantic.
Where do I want to sit and like kind of feel like Alex and I, we're always with Jack. We're always with a huge crowd of people.
It means
like people,
you're a teenager, which means you're always at Cane's, right?
Right, or the Skyline. So this is about romantic, where we could go and kind of block out the world. That's how I'm viewing this. This
Escape
is not about
the world
food.
For a little mm-hmm. bit. Okay, number seven, Maury's Tiny Cove. West Side, Best Side.
It is romantic. It has like dim lighting and low ceilings and amazing martinis.
Cozy, it's like super cozy.
Like in a New York classic restaurant kind of way. So I would... And it's some Italian, and it's not that it's Italian, but it has that feel to it. So I'll go. It's romantic.
All right, number seven, Soto, way too low.
Way too low.
Way too low, guys. I mean, okay.
I mean, we just were talking about Ghost Baby. Like,
maybe
Soto's
what we should do
the
is
closest to Ghost Baby that there is, with its underground and its dim lighting, like.
Yeah.
Read the menu before you go, dim lighting.
Right.
It is super romantic in there. There's no getting around that.
Number six, Nolia.
Definitely. You feel like transplanted into like New Orleans.
Yeah, somewhere off the French Quarter. Uh-huh. Cute little location.
And on like on the corner with the windows and over the Rhine.
I agree. Yeah. I think six is about right.
Okay.
Mita's number five.
Yes, actually.
Really? I would have pushed it down a little bit. I love Mita's. I love eating that kind
of
food.
Really,
like, that's
nice
my jam. It doesn't
the
feel...
The columns, though.
Yeah.
It has, like, that Spanish feel.
You know what, too? It's kind of romantic because a lot of the tables sit facing the street with windows. So you kind of walk by or you drive by and you see people in there and you're like, oh, that looks romantic.
Agreed.
All right. Okay. We'll go with that. All right. This one. Yes, exactly. Blind Lemon.
I have not been there in a while, but I remember it as that.
I mean, cozy with a capital C.
Yep.
Yes, in Mount Adams. All right. Number three, Scotty's, another Italian joint.
I mean, it's like
downtown.
Every restaurant I ever went to in my hometown, so yes.
All right.
With the, you
old,
know what I love
old
about?
Old school Italian, not pretentious. This isn't your like...
Real tablecloths.
Yeah. Yeah.
Real,
yeah. Right.
Cloth table, cloth.
If you were gonna film the live action Lady and the Tramp and you needed the restaurant for the two dogs to be like slurping spaghetti together, you know the scene I'm talking about?
I do.
Yes.
Of course.
That's where you would go, Scotty's.
So I think we're getting ready. IMDb has kind of hinted that the Italian movie that was shot here is coming soon.
Who hinted?
The movie database, online.
Yeah. IMDb.
I think it's coming out pretty soon, and it was shot here. And if they didn't film in Scotty's, that was a huge mistake.
Well, I think they did, but if they didn't leave it in the movie, is that what you're saying? Yeah, okay. All right. Number two, Nicola's.
Definitely.
Solid choice.
Oh, their patio is incredible.
Yep.
Inside and outside. Yep.
Yes. And you know what? Not on the list, but also in the family of restaurants, is Forno.
Yes, delicious.
Yes. The Hyde Park location, not too romantic. It's a little loud in there. Great, great spot still. But their Montgomery location.
Someone was just telling me about that over the weekend. I've only been to the Hyde Park one.
Oh, you need to go to the one in Montgomery. It's more romantic. Or as my wife would say, romantical.
Okay.
She invents her own adjectives. Yeah. All right. Number one, and this is going to be controversial, Prima Vista.
I'm not sure I would have put it at number one, but I could see with the view. But I'm used to having Sunday dinners there because that's like our West Side,
right?
You know, restaurant and a nicer Sunday dinner than we make at home, Italian. So I think of it more of as a family restaurant. But there's plenty of people on dates, and there's tables for two right against the windows overlooking
again,
the city.
You know, it is, you know, perched high atop the hill. Again, West Side. Good luck getting there if you're not West Side familiar. You know, it's like you're snaking
up. Everyone has GPS.
Oh, yes, that is true. I don't like
this
to
This is
use
a good
it,
list. The West Side is really well represented here.
Yeah, yeah. So
there's a lot of good options. I would have put Colette on here. Everyone knows I love Colette if you listen to this podcast.
French restaurant.
I think it is French-ish romantic.
Restaurants. And it, yeah, I would say, yeah. Well, I think they did a good job with this list. You know, like if you had to, I would, if I was fine-tuning the list, I might bump Baker's Table. Again, love Baker's Table, but I would put Colette just a little bit higher on the romantic scale in my mind.
Definitely on the list.
And I would say, even though my, you know, Lauren would disagree, I must be pretty romantic because I've been to every one of these restaurants.
You are romantic. I know that about you. You guys on a lot of dates together.
Would you tell her that? I mean,
like you and Blink, you honor your anniversary.
I'm not naturally romantic, though. I have to sort of like work at it.
I think you're really good at it. Don't do as much.
I'm blushing. No, just kidding.
Would you have Valentine's? You guys, it's too late to get Valentine's Day reservations in the city. Do you have reservations?
No, because she's flying on Valentine's. She's leaving me. Yeah, okay. I'm covered. But here, get this. This is why you shouldn't be like half joking. You always need to be serious when you throw ideas out because someone might say, that's a great idea. So she's going on an all-girls trip to
Iceland.
That's
a great idea.
To Iceland.
Oh, I know this.
With some women she connected with that she does yoga with. And so on the way back, did we talk about this on the podcast before?
I
was just talking to you about it. On the way back from Iceland, she has a stop in Paris. And I said, half joking, half serious, but most joking, oh, why don't I just meet you in Paris for dinner? And we'll just do it like, you know, that kind of thing. And she's like, that's a great idea.
And?
So we're having a deferred Valentine's weekend the week after. Meeting in Paris.
And you say you're not romantic? Like anyone listening right now, that is romantic. That's super romantic.
But is it romantic since I was like joking? If she's going to listen to this, I'm going to be in so much trouble.
When you're in Paris with her, it's going to be incredible.
Yes. And I've not been.
Oh,
I have not been. So, yes.
Great.
We're going to. So one night in Paris became two nights.
You guys
have
only been once.
Obviously.
It's not like, but it was an incredible week.
So
of
this is one Valentine's. And anniversary, because our anniversary falls in February too, that it like played out. I'm not running around at the last minute trying to think of something, get a reservation or whatever. It just kind of like naturally unfolded. So check 2025 off the, you know, the list of like, I didn't screw up Valentine's Day.
Definitely not.
What are you doing? Or do you know? Is Alex surprising you?
We are cooking. Alex said he wanted to cook, but I'm setting the table really nice and we've put a lot of thought into it. Like in the dining room, and like he loves to cook.
That's a fantastic idea because it's sort of amateur night, you know? Like that's when everybody wants to go out.
No, 100%. And we've like a lot of prefixes, it's kind of expensive. And so we would just, because he does like to cook, it's like one of his love languages. Mm-hmm. So I was like, we'll just make it special and we're gonna not like, you know, wear our pajamas while we're eating dinner on the couch.
When did love language become a common phrase in our world?
There's a book about it. So probably about that time the book came out.
I think so. Yeah.
It's a very true thing though. People give of themselves in different ways.
Yeah. I'm told that my love language is words.
I'm sure that's mine too.
Yeah. Only fitting. Okay. Well, should we wrap this up?
Yes.
Thanks for listening to this week's That's So Cincinnati podcast, a production of The Enquirer and Cincinnati.com. A bottle of red, a bottle of white, whatever kind of mood you're in tonight.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a rating and share it with a friend who loves all things Cincinnati.
Finally, if you value local journalism and haven't subscribed for full digital access to Cincinnati.com, now is a great time. Just go to Cincinnati.com and click on the subscribe button to see a special offer just for you. I'll meet you anytime you want in our Italian restaurant.
Thanks again. See you next week.